The face and torso of Iron Fist's chief engineer swam into focus in front of Zinge on the ship's bridge.
Sir, we've identified the trouble. The engineering compartments are swarming with, well, saboteur droids.
Zinge gave him a look to suggest the man shouldn't make jokes.
Would you like to try again?
Standard MSE-6 utility droids, sir. They've gone mad, or been reprogrammed. With their internal tools, they're opening access hatches, chewing their way into wire clusters, sending false data, dragging chips out of their housings, all in the hyperdrive systems.
The absurdity of what the man was saying hit Zinge, and he almost snorted.
And what are you doing about this?
We're, kicking the things to pieces with our boots, Warlord. Between the primary and redundant systems, we're restoring the system to functionality.
Zinge turned to Melvar.
Very clever. I wish our analysts had anticipated such an approach to sabotage. We need thinkers like her in my organization, General.
Are we not going to kill her, then?
I said thinkers like her, but loyal ones. Her fate will serve to reinforce that loyalty.
Iron Fist didn't alter course. In the minutes it took Wedge to form up his group of six squadrons.
Leader to group, set S-foils to attack position. Begin your assault runs.
Wedge dove toward the Superstar Destroyer. The two medics lay with their limbs tied, their mouths gagged, as Lara assembled the humanoids she'd freed. There were two pachydermal Ortolans, three Ewoks, male and female Gamorreans, three Belars looking like large children's toys, two knee-high Ranats with suspicious eyes and frequently bared incisors, one huge white-furred Talls with four pain-racked eyes, and five waist-high Chadrafan, whose ears flicked back and forth between listening to Lara's words and to the struggles of the medics.
"We can get you out on escape pods," Lara said. "Unless... can any of you pilot a shuttle?"
One of the humanoids raised a paw. "The Ewok." Lara stared at him.
"You're kidding."
"No," he said. "Doctors put me in simulators. See if Korlat can learn to fly."
"And you can?"
"Yes."
"Korlat, you can't even reach all the controls."
"Warlord had mechanics make me prosthetics for hands and feet."
"Stop it."
The words emerged from Lara as a shout, and she buried her face in her hands.
"I know this joke already."
"Joke?"
After a moment, she uncovered her face and knelt before the Ewok to look at him from his own altitude.
"Korlat, we're the same thing, you and I.
We're both lies that eventually became the truth." The Ewok shook his head, not comprehending.
"Don't worry. You'll understand someday. Let's go."
There was a tremendous bang from overhead, and the bridge lights dimmed as a nearby torpedo strike momentarily overloaded some of Iron Fist's systems. Melvar's attention was fixed on the hollow, showing the damage Iron Fist had sustained and was continuing to suffer. Blinking red zones indicated damaged areas. A secondary list indicated system failures.
"We have a radiation leak on Deck 4.
Zinge grimaced.
"Deck 4 is the least of our troubles.
"Yes, sir. Still, I want to check it out personally. On a hunch." The general bowed and headed back toward the bridge exit. Zinge followed him, but stopped at one of the secondary communications consoles in the security foyer. He leaned over the shoulder of the man there.
"Is any of the units assaulting us now confirmed as Rogue Squadron?"
The man nodded.
"Yes, sir. And based on performance, we get a better than 50% probability that Antilles is leading them."
"Excellent."
Zinge pulled out his comlink.
"Zinge to Baron Fell."
"Fell here."
"Prepare to launch. We'll give you a course that will take you within visual range of Rogue Squadron. Do whatever it takes to draw them away. Far away."
"And then?"
"I'll send a support squadron a couple of minutes later. Between your pilots and this support, you should be able to kill Antilles. Please do so.
Oh, Lord. It will be a pleasure.
Zinj moved slowly back up to his preferred station on the command walkway. It was time, almost time, to decide. The next few minutes would show him whether Solo's fleet or his own would prevail in this battle. In the latter case, he would send Solo yelping back to Rebel space, or, best of all, kill him. In the former, he would have to destroy Iron Fist. Temporarily, at least. Lara pushed open the access hatch just a few centimeters and peered out into the corridor beyond. It was empty, echoing with a radiation alarm, flashing with the red lights appropriate to such a dangerous condition. Opposite the hatch was the door into the hangar bay she wanted. She stepped out and helped haul Tonin over the hatch lip. "Give us a minute to get the door open," she told the non-humans crowded into the access shaft. "Then come join us." Within the hangar, only three vehicles remained. Lara's X-Wing, a Lambda-class shuttle, and a larger shuttle of similar design, an Imperial landing craft. "We'll give them the landing craft," she told Tonin. "You still have the file on my X-Wing?" Tonin tweeted in affirmative. "Open it up, disable all transponder systems, and disengage whatever else the file says they've done to it. I don't want them to be able to detonate it remotely." "They won't need to." The voice came from behind her, from the hangar corner nearest the door. She whirled. General Melvar stood there, a blaster pistol in his hand, and Ensign Gatterweld held a blaster rifle at the ready beside him. Both men moved toward her.
"You had to come back here for your souvenir X-Wing," Melvar said. "Perhaps your only mistake in a skillful escape attempt. I knew your arrival was pending when you or your droid falsified the radiation leak for this deck."
Lara raised her hands. "Will you be killing me now?" She saw shadows congregating behind the two men at the door into the bay.
"No," Melvar said. "That's the Warlord's prerogative."
The humanoids moved forward, the sounds of their passage masked by the alarm sounding in the corridor.
"I think..."
Melvar stopped, his eyes darting right where one of the Gamorreans had just moved up within his peripheral vision. He turned, brought the blaster around. The other Gamorrean, the female, grabbed his forearm and slammed him to the hangar's metal floor. Gatterwell spun, panic on his face. And then the non-humans were all over the two men, pounding them, raking claws across their faces, biting at limbs and heads and torsos. "Stop it!" Lara yelled. The humanoids looked up at her. "Just bind them, leave them. They'll die when Iron Fist is destroyed." In minutes, Lara and Tonin had the two vehicles ready for departure. She fitted a ladder to the side of her X-Wing. "You're sure you can fly this thing?" The Ewok, standing at the base of the shuttle's boarding ramp, nodded. He carried the objects he'd brought with him from the hidden medical facility. 4 prosthetic extensions, 2 with articulated hands at the ends, 2 with long-toed feet. Tonin rolled up to Lara and whistled a question. She didn't have to know the musical speech of droids to understand. "No, Tonin. You're going with them. You have to broadcast all that data I recorded about Zinj's projects, the medical data." He whistled again, more urgently, shrilly, a complicated message. She drew her goggles from her pack, put them on, plugged the trailing wire into Tonin's side. Tonin's message read, "Where are you going?" "I'm going to rejoin my unit." "You said they hated you. They will be your enemies. You'll die if you do this." "Maybe," she said. "Probably." "Don't." She stared down into his holocam eye and suddenly found it and Tonin's stance to be as expressive as any human mannerism. "Oh, Tonin, I have to.
I have to do this to be who I decided I want to be. Do you understand? No. You've already reprogrammed yourself. That's enough. I wish it were. But an intention isn't anything unless you carry it out. She knelt, wrapped her arms around the droid, gave him a squeeze she knew he could not feel. You will tell us if you need help. We will help. I have my comlink, she said. I'll tell you. Tears blurred her vision. She rose, pulled her goggles free of Tonin's jack, and hurriedly climbed up into her cockpit, unable to face the droid again. Tonin wheedled one last sad sound and rolled toward the landing craft. On Wedge's sensor board, the interceptors of the 181st had a commanding lead. They were already entering the atmosphere of the moon, once home to Selagus's colony. Keltainer said,
Wraith 5 to Leader. They're descending toward the west coast of the primary continent. Atmospheric conditions not helpful. Heavy rain, heavy winds. They're banking toward a set of ruins. No sign of life in the ruins. They're strafing. There has to be a living target down there, Leader. Permission to engage.
Wedge closed his eyes. He'd already confirmed that there was no native comm traffic. It had to be a trap, had to be. But if it wasn't, the New Republic wasn't here to protect itself, but to protect innocence. There might be colony survivors down there. It was that simple. He opened his eyes again. 1 second had clicked by on his console chrono. Permission granted. Ahead, the interceptors of the 181st continued with their low-level strafing runs. They seemed to have no particular target. Their aim seemed to be the transformation of the entire set of ruins into smaller rubble and dust. Kelso Jansen and Elisar come in from the east, aiming for a pair of interceptors near the ruins' border. Their targets shied away toward the colony center. Two more turned in the direction of Jansen and Elisar for a head-to-head. Jansen and Elisar banked toward the newcomers, but those targets too looped away as a third pair maneuvered to engage the Wraiths. It was a deadly game of keep away, flyers of the 181st turning to engage the Wraith just long enough to get their attention, then breaking away to return to their strafing. I don't get it, Kel said. They're playing defensively.
They're waiting,
Jansen said.
For the rest of the rogues and Wraiths.
Zinge watched in mounting disbelief as his fleet's damage displays grew even redder.
Velar, are they that good?
They seem to be, sir, the captain said. There was tension in his voice, but his expression was unwavering.
Mon Ramonda is almost in position to engage us. Your opinion?
The captain turned a regretful face to Zinge. Sir, we are not going to win this fight.
All ahead full. Zinge said. Set your course for Second Death's position. Bring in all starfighters from all ships, except the 181st and their support.
He felt something sharp in his chest, a pain that had everything to do with the sudden loss of his reputation for infallibility on the battlefield. Rogue Squadron and Wraith Squadron broke through the high cloud cover into a dark world lashed by rains. They dove toward the colony ruins, breaking by wing pairs, each pair of pilots seeking out prey, starfighters that were frailer but far faster than theirs. They saw the enemy interceptors scatter by pairs, each trying to find an advantageous angle to repel the X-Wing's assault. Wedge tried to pick out by eye which of the enemies was Baron Fell. He needn't have bothered. A pair of interceptors rose straight toward him and Tycho.
Fell, is that you?
Antilles,
came the familiar voice.
So good to see you again.
Fell, let's not do this. You've been a rogue. I really don't want to kill you.
Why ever not, Wedge? I don't share any such sentiment about you.
Wedge gritted his teeth. Because, brother-in-law, you haven't yet told me where my sister is. Tell me that, and I may lose all compunction about vaping you where you fly. The nimbler interceptor settled into position behind Wedge, its lasers opening up, bracketing him. Burst after burst of laser fire flashed to the left, the right, beneath the X-Wing, as Wedge used every trick he knew to make the man miss. A violent crosswind hit Wedge. He didn't struggle against it. He let it propel him toward shore, a sudden movement that caught Fel off guard. And then, for a brief moment, his targeting brackets went green around Fel's interceptor. Wedge fired and saw the red flashes of his lasers score the squint's engines. Fel's interceptor dropped, half out of control, and he banked toward shore. Wedge followed, alert for a trick. But Fel continued to lose altitude at a dangerous rate and came to the surface in a skidding, rolling, half-controlled crash that constituted the worst landing Wedge had seen in years. Wedge circled the downed interceptor and angled in to land. Lara's sensor board had shown the rogues and wraiths descending, and the 10 strange ties she pursued did likewise. She entered the moon's atmosphere at the angle necessary to keep air friction from burning her alive, then set her S-foils to attack position. Wedge swung his legs over the lip of his cockpit and slid with reckless haste to the ground. He drew his blaster and moved at a full run across the sand toward Baron Fel. Fel, evidently injured, rolled over on his back. His right leg did not turn the way it should have. Wedge could see it was badly broken beneath the knee. Wedge aimed his blaster. Mind answering a few questions?
Not at all.
Fel's voice was muffled. He reached up to pull his helmet free. Wedge blinked. The man under his gun had Fel's height and build, but his blonde hair and homely features were not Fel's. Who are you? The man offered him a pained smile. My name is Tetran Kowal. I know that name, Wedge frowned. Some sort of actor. Face Lauren doesn't think much of you. That's because he is my inferior in every way, the man said. Where is Fel? The man shrugged. Really? We have no idea. So, this was all a ploy. Wedge felt sudden exhaustion begin to eat at him. All these months hoping that this man would have some word of his sister. And this man turned out to be the wrong one. Why? Kowal slowly put his hands behind his head, a posture of relaxation and contentment that was belied by the sweat on his face and the odd angle at which his right leg lay. Well, you, actually. Scuttlebutt had it that Fel had deserted you and that you'd taken it rather personally. The Warlord decided that his reappearance would be a mystery you just had to solve. He put together a new 181st, half with human pilots, half with flying bombs that could sidle up next to you and detonate, making hash of the famous Wedge Antilles, despite your overly vaunted skills.
So your only job was to lure me out and kill me?
Kowal smiled. And it worked. He pointed eastward. In the distance, 2 or 3 kilometers off, TIE fighters, their outlines unusual, were looping around from east to south. TIE Raptors, Kowal said. New design. Nice to fly. They'll be on us in a few seconds. And you can't get into the air by then. You're dead, Wedge Antilles.
Wedge sheathed the blaster and made a sprint for his X-Wing. Kowal was right, of course. The TIEs would be in firing position about the time he was sliding into the cockpit. There were 3 incoming TIEs, and they were of a type he'd never seen before. They rolled to port to line up along the straight section of beach and came on, their engines shrill, a second from firing.
Then, Wedge saw something blue flash over his head from behind, and the center TIE exploded. The other 2 broke left and right, momentarily abandoning their run. Wedge finished shutting the canopy and got his X-Wing up on repulsor lifts. He had the S-foils locked into attack position before he drifted 10 meters forward. Another X-Wing flashed by, mere meters overhead. It was painted in the darker gray of Wraith Squadron and had no astromech. The X-Wing looped in pursuit of one of the alien-looking TIEs, climbing in its wake. Wedge turned in the direction of the other, coaxing his X-Wing up to speed.
Lara, is that you?
Sorry I was late.
She was banking hard, trying to get her X-Wing around at an angle that could fire on her target.
Wedge turned after his target, TIE Raptor, saw that the vehicle was now looping around to get behind Lara. Hold tight. I owe you one, he said.
I owe you,
she said.
I... There.
The Raptor pilot hit a bad patch of crosswind and was tumbled eastward. Lara fired, her lasers creasing the rear of the TIE. A plume of smoke emerged from her target. The starfighter dropped, tumbling into the sea, hitting with enough force to turn anything within it into something resembling jelly. But the last Raptor dropped in behind Lara and began stitching her rear with laser fire. Wedge put all discretionary energy into acceleration, hurtling toward the engagement. The TIE Raptor fired again. This was no laser. A concussion missile detonated just below Lara's X-Wing. Wedge saw her stern leap up. And then the X-Wing was tumbling, un-aerodynamic, slinging components in all directions as it dropped. Punch out! Punch out! Wedge said. But had no time to watch. He turned after the TIE Raptor. Wedge flicked his targeting brackets back and forth, but was unable to get a lock. So he fired directly over the TIE Raptor's hull, immediately above its top viewport. The pilot dodged out of reflex, straight down. The leading edges of its odd wings dipped into the surf. The TIE rolled forward, its wings breaking free and being flung into the air with more speed and violence than anything coming off Lara's X-Wing. Wedge looped around, looking for Lara. He found her X-Wing 50 meters offshore. It was a twisted, broken thing, slowly rolling over from its belly onto its side. He cruised over it slowly, running on repulsor lifts, and looked into the cockpit. Then he shook his head and banked back toward Tycho and the colony.
No, 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 Solo said. Iron Fist can't have jumped. We'd have seen the sensor signs of hyperspace entry.
The sensor officer offered him a face full of confusion. But she's gone. It's strange. Several minutes ago, we thought we detected a ship out there at that position. Her sensor echo wasn't anything we could identify, and she vanished almost immediately. Now Iron Fist goes out there and vanishes too. And all the starfighters on her, ours and theirs. We're not even getting comm traffic from them. We do have an odd visual. Bring it up. The visual enhancer brought up a hologram of nothingness. A black square blotting out the stars directly ahead of Mon Ramonda, on the exact path Iron Fist took many kilometers ahead. Three shuttles were outbound from the anomaly. Several Y-wings from Mon Ramonda approached it at cautious speeds.
What is that?
The sensor operator shook her head. It's not on any sensors but visual. It's not like anything I've ever seen.
As Solo and his bridge crew watched, flame gouted out from the center of the blackness, then spread to engulf it entirely. The approaching Y-wings veered away, metal debris brilliantly glowing purple from the center of the explosion. In moments, the bright ball of explosive gas faded, and the blackness too was gone, the stars beyond it restored. The sensor operator blinked.
We had signs of a hyperspace entry just before the explosion, sir.
Find out, Solo said.
Find out if it was Iron Fist or that phantom ship.
Yes, sir.
A moment later, the communications officer rocked back in his chair as if slapped. He turned to Solo. Sir, I have a transmission from one of our Y-wings. The pilot thinks you ought to see this right away. Put it up. The enhanced starfield wavered. The stars changed. And much of the view was replaced by a tumbling piece of debris, an enormous triangle of metal, trailing cables and metal spars. Portions of the debris still glowed from the heat of the explosion. Painted on the side of the triangle, rotating into and out of sight as the debris spun, were the words, Iron Fist. Captain Onoma joined him.
That is her bow.
Yes.
Solo let out a breath and felt 5 months of pressure and frustration begin to leave him. If he could breathe like that for a while,
expelling the nightmare of this command one lungful at a time. He could someday become a real human again. He moved back to his control chair and sat heavily. All across the bridge, officers began applauding, offering handshakes, exchanging embraces.
Come. Let me address the fleet.
Ready, sir.
This is General Solo. Iron Fist is destroyed. We'll tell you more as we know more.
He gestured for the comm officer to cease the transmission.
Sensors? Communications? What about our pilots who were in her vicinity?
The sensor officer shook her head. They were pretty close to the explosion. Unless they move under their own power, we won't be able to distinguish them from debris. I have a transmission from a Y-wing pilot, the comm officer said. He's injured, coming in on one engine. He was just emerging from the darkness field when Iron Fist blew. He was pretty disoriented while he was in the darkness field. He saw a second capital ship on sensors. It must have been the one that made hyperspace. He thinks most of the starfighters are gone, sir.
Solo closed his eyes. Maybe, just maybe, those were the last beings he would ever have to order to their deaths.
Incoming message, sir, from one of those outbound shuttles. He says it's Warlord Zinge.
Of course, Solo murmured. He wouldn't stay aboard Iron Fist and let himself be blown up. Not even if I asked him nicely. He raised his head. Chewie, come join me for this one.
Chewbacca moved in to stand behind Solo.
Zinge's image against the background of a Lambda shuttle cockpit appeared both on Solo's private screen and as a holo projection over the bridge's main viewport. There was no humor remaining to Zinge's expression. Sweat darkened parts of his white uniform. His mustachios drooped in what might have been, under other circumstances, a comical fashion.
I've signaled you to offer congratulations,
the warlord said. His voice was low, pained.
You realize you have cost me very dearly.
Han summoned up the energy to give him a mocking smile. I don't have much to offer you in compensation. Maybe I can let you kiss my Wookiee.
Chewbacca grumbled a noise of dissent. The color rose in Zinge's face, and he spoke again. Mostly words Solo did not know. However, one blast in the Rodian language he understood quite well. It described Han Solo's chemical composition in a fashion that would make any Rodian's blood boil. Then Zinge sagged, all energy seemingly having fled him.
General,
he said,
we will meet again.
I'm sure we will. Solo lost his smile.
Zinge, I'm not a rich man, not really an ambitious man. Maybe you should take that into account. It means that you can never cost me as much as I've cost you.
Never. Zinge regarded him soberly for a moment. Then his hollow image faded. Shuttles made the launch to hyperspace, reported the sensor operator.
Solo nodded. Then he looked up at Chewbacca. We got him. He's not dead, but his fleet is a shambles, and his financial empire's coming to pieces. He may never recover.
Chewie rumbled a reply.
No. I never really would have asked you to kiss him.
With the colors of hyperspace flowing past the forward viewport, sign of safety that was finally his, Zinge turned to his pilot.
What did you think of my performance?
The man looked at him blankly.
I suppose it was pretty good, sir.
You obviously have no appreciation of the theater, dear boy.
Oh, well.
In a few minutes, we'll rendezvous with Iron Fist and head on to Rancor Base, where you won't be called upon to provide artistic criticism you're not qualified to offer.
He heaved a sigh. Dr. Gast lay on her bed in the tiny chamber that was her cell. Nawara Venn entered, stared at her impassively.
You launch tomorrow in the shuttle Nara for Coruscant.
He tossed a packet tied together with cord at her feet.
Your new identity, he said. Mahag Tulis, home decorator from Alderaan. It will stand up to any scrutiny, New Republic or Imperial.
And my money?
We have to send out a holocom request for your money. How would you prefer your credits, New Republic or Imperial?
Imperial, of course, what do you think?
Imperial, it is. As soon as they arrive, you'll be off to Coruscant.
I need a bodyguard. I'll be carrying 500,000 credits. It wouldn't do to let me be robbed. That would reflect badly on your New Republic. The Twi'lek nodded.
You're absolutely right. I'll be your bodyguard until we get to Coruscant. Once we are there, you can hire one to your liking and book your own passage to whatever world you like.
Gast sat back, satisfied. One or two more days, and she'd be rid of Zinj, rid of the rebels, rid of this whole business forever.
Wedge looked over the fighter pilots of Mon Ramonda. It was the last time the four squadrons were ever likely to be assembled this way. The pilots stared at him, their expressions tired, solemn, battered, triumphant. In spite of the high casualty toll, it had been a successful engagement. Iron Fist was gone. Wedge addressed the group. Most of the rogues and the wraiths received a communication from an unknown craft as we were departing Selkaron. It turned out to be a lengthy message and data package from Lara Nutzel, recorded before her death. It included many details about Zinj's brainwashing project that should allow intelligence to dismantle Zinj's operation on Coruscant. Many commendations will be resulting from our recent actions, which continued. We'll get to them later. I think I first ought to let you know that Fleet Command and Starfighter Command seem to be in agreement. That you all have seen enough carrier duty for a while. Squadron transfers are in order and will be coming through in the next day or two.
Face's hand shot up.
And the wraiths? We're still on Mon Ramonda?
Not exactly. For you, I have good news, bad news, and news you'll have to interpret for yourselves. Face, I'm obliged to inform you that your captaincy has stuck. It's Captain Lauren from now on.
The pilots closest to Face treated him to backslaps.
The bad news is that as of today, Wraith Squadron has been decommissioned as an X-Wing unit.
Wedge heard intakes of breath from several pilots, not just from Wraiths.
It's not quite what it sounds like. You've made quite an impression on General Kraken, the head of intelligence. As of now, Wraith Squadron has been recommissioned as an intelligence unit. Obviously, the government won't just yank you out of Starfighter Command and give you, like, presents to another branch of the service. But all you have to do is say yes, and your transfer to the new Wraith Squadron will be accepted instantly, and with thanks. General Kraken offers his personal wishes that you do accept transfer and that you stay together as a team.
I'm coming back to Rogue Squadron, said Jansen. That was the deal.
Wedge smiled at him.
Wes, the Wraiths don't want you anyway.
Jansen grinned and accepted handshakes from the Wraiths and rogues around him.
Those Wraiths who do not intend to accept General Kraken's offer can tell me more privately than Wes here, Wedge said. And regardless of where you choose to go, drop by the pilot's lounge this evening for one last drink together. You can celebrate where you've been and where you're going.
Face leaned against the pilot lounge bar and felt the brandy ease its way down his throat, warming him from within.
It was the end.
Tomorrow his profession would be different and his surroundings would be changed. And so much of what he'd known for so long would be left behind.
How is the voting running? Wedge asked him.
Face said, most of the wraiths will be intelligence wraiths tomorrow. Wedge nodded.
I think that's the right choice. I thought the New Republic needed a unit like the Wraiths. Now others have bought in as well.
Donos moved through the crowd to stand before them. He extended his hand to Face. Face took it.
You've already congratulated me.
And now I'm leaving you.
Staying with Starfighter Command?
Yes. Flying is what I want to do. Donos gave a helpless shrug. Face grinned.
And staying with X-Wings, too? I hope so. I put in my request for transfer to any X-Wing unit with openings.
Ah, Wedge said, I forgot to mention. Your approval for transfer came in earlier today. You have a new unit. Rogue Squadron.
Donis' mouth worked for a moment. Finally, he said, Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Go, talk to your new squadmates. Maybe you could manage to be a little less distant with them than you were with the old ones.
Donis managed to smile.
Yes, I guess I could use the practice.
The descent to Coruscant's surface was uneventful, but Dr. Gast, seeing the former Imperial throne world for the first time in years, was thrilled by every moment. Nawara Venn, beside her, obviously did not share her enthusiasm for the world's attractions, and that, too, gave her a little thrill of victory. To discommode the subhuman who had offered her so much grief was simply lovely. An hour later, she and the Twi'lek neared the head of the customs entry line.
Where do you go from here?
Venn asked her. I'm not fool enough to tell you, she said. You can be sure it's somewhere far from bad-smelling, bad-tempered Twi'leks. Somewhere orderly, where the cutting edge of medical research is admired and respected. She swung her two bags atop the examination table. The customs worker, an aging human man, opened the first and froze. He looked up at her, astonishment in his eyes.
What's this?
Money. She handed him a data card. Here's my financial record. It constitutes authorization to travel with a large sum such as this.
It's not the sum. These are Imperial credits. Bringing them into Coruscant is an act of smuggling.
Nawara Venn leaned in close.
Actually, by Coruscant law, bringing in that many Imperial credits can only be for purposes of sedition. That's a far more serious charge than merely smuggling. Dr. Gast, you'll be spending at least a lifetime in prison on Coruscant.
The customs official snapped his fingers. Security officers approached. Gast turned on Venn.
You set me up.
He looked down at her impassively.
No, I let you do exactly as you wanted. I also saved your life. I'd say I've treated you rather well.
She spat at him. Then strong hands gripped Dr. Gast's arms, and she was yanked away. Han Solo and Wedge Antilles sat in the cockpit of the Millennium Falsehood, their feet up on the control boards.
What are you going to do with her? Wedge asked.
Well, technically, I can't do anything with the Falsehood, Solo said. She belongs to the New Republic. But I'll recommend they put her up in a museum as a near replica of the Falcon. That way nobody's ever likely to bother me anymore about donating the old girl. The comm unit crackled into life, startling both men.
Bridge to General Solo. Communications here, sir. We have a situation.
Go ahead.
A while back, you ordered my station to run all incoming messages through a voice analysis program, so you could be notified immediately if Lara Notzel contacted you again. No one thought to end the program after her death. Well, just before we made our last jump, we received a recorded message. Let me patch it through to you, sir.
A data screen popped up, announcing the details of the message's origin and route. It was originally transmitted one day before. Its intended recipient was Min Donis, Lieutenant, New Republic Starfighter Command. The woman, it showed, had long red hair artfully draped in a braid over her shoulder. She was rather delicate of features, with an uncertain smile on her lips.
Hello, Min,
she said.
It's been a while since we've seen one another.
Solo and Wedge looked at each other.
That's Lara Notzel, Solo said.
Wedge glanced over at the data stream.
No, it's someone named Kearney Slane.
You're not even surprised.
Solo glared at him, suspicion on his face.
I'm back on Corellia now,
the redhead said.
after a few years of knocking around the galaxy. And I know, after the way we parted company, you may not want to see me again, but I had to find out if there was any sort of chance for us. I think I'm finally ready and able to give it a try.
There was hope in the woman's expression, and acceptance.
I'll be here at the address given in the message header for the next few weeks. I'm trying to drum up traffic for my new shuttle business. I have a ship, a Sentinel-class landing craft I obtained used. I have a co-pilot you really need to meet, and an astromech you already know. Contact me. Visit me. Do whatever you feel you have to. I'll accept whatever you decide.
The screen faded. Stand by, communications. Solo shut off the cockpit microphone and gave Wedge an accusing look. You said, when you overflew Notzel's X-Wing, that you saw no sign that the pilot had ejected.
That's right, Wedge stretched lazily. As the X-Wing was rolling over and sinking as I flew over her, I couldn't see whether the pilot's chair was still in there.
Commander Square Corners himself, lying by omission. I can't believe it. Maybe, ultimately, I believe in happy endings, Wedge said. I can hope for them anyway. Solo considered. She could come back. What she did as an Imperial agent is nothing compared to what she did for us. Wedge shook his head.
I think the way you do. But the law doesn't. In her false identity, she swore an oath to the New Republic, then transmitted classified data to the Empire during a time of war. That's treason. The only legal outcome for her would be the death sentence, regardless of the fact that she's not remotely the same person who served the Empire and Admiral Trigget. You're right. Solo reactivated the comm unit. Communications, the sender's vocal similarity to Lara Notzel is a coincidence. She's dead. Understood?
Sir, our correlation is something like 99.997.
Tell you what, I'll send Chewbacca up there and have him explain to you what I just said.
No, sir, not necessary. I understand.
Forward the message to Lieutenant Donos. And then erase all other ship's copies of the message. Nothing goes into archives. Understood?
Fully, sir.
Solo out. He rose. Come on. We've got an hour before arrival at Coruscant. I'll buy you a drink. I'll let you. As they walked down the falsehood's loading ramp, Solo threw an arm over Wedge's shoulders. Corellian to Corellian. You know what the great thing about being a general is? No, what? In lots of circumstances, you can pretty much do whatever you want. With his free hand, Solo reached over and gave Wedge's hair a thorough mussing. Wedge batted his hand away. Hey, stop it.
No, I don't have to. Hey, you should try this general thing. You'd like it.
I don't think so.
I'm going to send a message to Akbar and tell him just what a natural you are for that rank.
General? I'm warning you.
This is Anthony Heal. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Solo Command, Book 7 of the X-Wing series by Aaron Alston. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Lars Hoel, abridgment by Sharon Matlin. Solo Command is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1999, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 1999, Lucasfilm Limited. The book Solo Command is available wherever Bantam books are sold.